Blog Talk Radio. Listening to the Global Product Management Talk, a regular broadcast for passionate product professionals and business people that don't get a chance to leave their desk and participate in product talks in person, so we bring product talks to you wherever you are. Every episode, we discuss different aspects of what it takes to produce successful products. Everyone is invited, including agile practitioners, user experience designers, content and community managers, business owners, CEOs, entrepreneurs, social media strategists, innovation managers, business analysts, project managers, product managers, program managers, product marketing managers, brand managers, software developers, and you, as well as everyone involved with the entire product lifecycle process from inception to sunsetting. Follow us on Blog Talk Radio. Go to www.blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. That's our website, www.PRODMGMTTALK.com. Follow us on Twitter at PRODMGMTTALK. And use the hashtag to tweet answers to the questions and follow the tweets, # PRODMGMTTALK. This is Cindy F. Solomon, your host for the Global Product Management Talk, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Follow me on Twitter at Cindy F. Solomon and on the web, CindyFSolomon.com. And this is Cindy. Welcome to today. It is November 5th, and this is a Global Product Management Talk live on Blog Talk Radio. It is a Monday. If you are in the United States, please vote. Vote tomorrow. If you are registered or not registered, you can walk into any polling place and request to vote. You should be allowed to vote no matter what. Okay, I'm excited today to be joined by the co-authors of Managing the Unmanageable. The book is about rules, tools, and insights for managing software people and teams. Ron Lichty and Mickey Mantle are here with me today. Hi, Ron and Mickey. Delighted to have you. So just a shout out to thank our sponsors, the AIPMM, the Association of International Product Marketing and Management, and also Atlassian, who is our broadcast sponsor. Thank you to Mark Lasco for our intro theme music. And also, we are recording live from Studio132.com, a six-time Emmy winner. Just have to get our sponsor spots in. So, Ron has said that the essence of the relationship between product managers and software development managers should be collaboration, pairing as product leaders. I've seen too many strained relationships, but I've also seen and experienced the sparks of synergy that result from close collaboration, working relationships that have enhanced the product, professional, and personal lives of everyone in the product organization and through the company. I first met Ron at Startup Product Talks in San Francisco. It's a monthly meetup where we talk about all issues having to do with products in startup. And then I met Ron again at Silicon Valley Code Camp. So it's very exciting to have you on the show. And when I first met you, it was before the book had come out. I understand that the focus of the book is about managing software developers and how to manage software developers. I want to say that the book for me has been personal. Because I was married to a software engineer, and I'll tell you, I wish I had this book when he was alive. It explains so much. And so I'd like to dedicate this show to my beloved husband, may he rest in peace, Bert A. Solomon, who was truly a, what I learned was he was a systems programmer, he was an artist, and he definitely did not like to manage people at all. And he kept getting pushed up into management, and it was something I didn't understand about him and about the situation at the time. But it's certainly why I came out to Silicon Valley. We got involved in startups early on, and we became a great team. I would go into startup as a product marketing manager, as a product manager, and bring him in. I certainly became a much better product manager because of my relationship with him and his inputs. And when he was ahead, when he was driving the product, it was so much easier for me to communicate with what was needed, feature requirements and everything else. A little bit more detail. For everyone who's listening, if you're a manager at all, pick up this book, Managing the Unmanageable. Even though it is focused on software developers, this will give you insights. This will make you a better manager. At the beginning, it goes into personality types, specifically about software developers, but they're applicable across the board if you have to manage anyone. In the middle section, and it's highlighted in gray, there's all kinds of tools and tidbits and quotes from luminaries and thought leaders in engineering, in product management, in across the board, people who know what they're talking about. It's very funny. Who would expect a book about managing software if you haven't done it? That it would be funny, and it would be excellent, of course. It goes into motivational theories. I think my favorite, if I had to pick a favorite chapter, it would be chapter 6, which is about becoming an effective programming manager, managing up, out, and yourself. And as a product manager, we don't necessarily have authority over managing anyone specific unless we're a VP, a product manager. Maybe if we're a director, we would have product managers reporting to us. But we're constantly having to manage up and out. And the hardest thing, of course, is to manage oneself. And I learned a lot about myself in terms of my managing ability and how to increase it. And, of course, because it's a technical book, they don't just give you tidbits, they quantify. They give you data points about how to measure these things. So that's my soft introduction on a book that's intended for a technical audience that I think will increase the ability of everyone who reads it. Let me just tell you a little bit about Ron. Ron Lichty has been transforming chaos to clarity and making software development hum for most of his 20 years managing software development and product organizations. He and his co-author, Mickey Mantle, who is joining us also today, have crafted a book that will help any software manager be more successful. They distilled their experience into a book that every beginning programming manager should read and have on their bookshelves for reference. Tell you a bit about Mickey, and then I'm going to turn it over to you guys. Mickey Mantle has been developing software for over 40 years, creating hardware and software products, and managing development teams for companies that include Evans and Sutherland, Pixar, Broadband, and Gracenote. Follow Ron at Ron Lichty, R-O-N-L-I-C-H-T-Y, and you can follow Mickey at M-W-M-A-N-T-L-E-C-A. But I'm going to have them speaking and not tweeting today, so Ron and Mickey, take it away.
So, Cindy, first of all, thanks so much for the great introduction. I'm glad you liked the book, and Chapter 6 is actually one of my favorite chapters, too, because a lot of times when people start managing, they only think about what they've got to do and not what they ought to do, and I think that Chapter 6 kind of helps highlight that. But I also want to just highlight that when we started this book, it actually started out with let's start by collecting a bunch of rules of thumb, because Ron and I had been collecting them for years and found them useful for ourselves. And then we started adding some other insights and knowledge around it, which turned into the chapters. The other thing you didn't highlight was that the book actually has three parts. It has these rules of thumb and the nuggets of wisdom that you mentioned in the center and the grade part. There's the chapters of the book. But we also included a bunch of spreadsheets, MS Word documents, and other things that we've used to help manage people, which we make available to those who buy the book from our website, which is managingtheunmanageable.net.
Cindy, thank you so much for your enthusiasm for the book. You made a comment about your husband that he had been pushed into management repeatedly, and in fact, that was our experience becoming managers. We were both software developers. We were both programmers. I had gotten a couple of patents in software compression algorithms. I was quite happy programming, and then this management thing came along, and I think the same thing happened to Mickey. We met about 10 or 15 years after we became managers and began comparing notes and discovered the same thing, that we had become managers. We had spent lots of time learning how to be programmers, but we had no training to be managers. And, in fact, that's how most managers become managers. One day they're a programmer and somebody comes along and says, you've got some people skills. You manage the team. And suddenly they're a manager with no background, no, they haven't spent a lot of time thinking about it. As in your husband's case, he wasn't particularly happy about the idea. I certainly wasn't myself. I went back and forth between being a programmer and a manager three times, and that was at Apple, before I decided that management was going to be my next career after having been a programmer. And I think it's a difficult transition because from a programmer's sense, when you program, it's all about being introverted and about climbing into the microprocessor and listening to the gates open and close, that kind of quiet space where you make algorithms come to life. And managing, on the other hand, is totally extroverted. You need to put a welcome mat out in front of your door, and interruptions the day before when you were a programmer were anathema, suddenly are the most important thing in your life. You welcome interruptions as a manager because those are people coming to tell you what's going on typically, and you have to listen very carefully because sometimes they're telling you what's going wrong, and you need to listen to that and be prepared to engage. And it's such a different transition from introversion to extroversion that was part of what motivated our writing this book.
Yeah, I can see from introversion to extroversion, but it's also you have to step away from rolling your sleeves up and actually doing the programming to managing the programming, which is a totally different discipline.
Absolutely, you really, and it's one of the hardest things to do because often you got to be a manager because you were a great programmer, or at least a very good programmer. And so now you're managing people who actually probably aren't as good as you, and you've got to let them make their own mistakes. Very hard to do.
It is. The name of the game in management is delegating, not doing. It's leveraging the strengths and the abilities of the people who work for you, not doing that work yourself. And it's keeping the corporate politics out of their lives so that they can do it effectively, shielding them from that. It's collaborating with product managers in particular and with the rest of the organization to enable both your team and what they're trying to create and to get the word of what they're trying to create out there to the rest of the organization. It's a really big change in role.
And just one other subtlety to it is not only do you have to step back and let them do it, but at the same time you have to keep your technical chops up sufficiently so that you can maintain their technical respect, which we've codified in the fact that we think that's one of the single biggest factors of being a successful software development manager is having the respect of your teams. And that typically means technical respect. And so you've got to let them do it, but at the same time, you've got to have your chops sharp enough that you could do it if you had to. So it's a delicate balancing act, and it's actually a very hard job.
Oh, it is. And, you know, this is a great segue into the Q1, which is, what does good software development management look like? But specifically, you're touching on how difficult it is to manage software developers, and also how difficult it is to be a product manager, because getting the respect of programmers, that's hard. That's hard across the board, and it's especially hard if you're not a programmer yourself, and it doesn't matter if you've had programming classes.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that you hit one of the nails on the head with the product management, which typically means you're responsible for managing a product, but you don't have direct responsibility for managing the people. So you have to manage by proxy. You have to manage by coercion, being nice to them, bribing them, you know, whatever will work in your book to get people to do what you need to do. Often that's why partnering with a software development manager, when it can become a cohesive team, they typically have the direct reporting responsibilities. And so if you have a problem, you can get them to back you up or even, you know, shield you from the issues that that developers might raise if you try to get them to do something themselves. So this dynamic duo of a great product manager and a great software development manager can move mountains, but it doesn't often happen.
Yeah, Cindy, you mentioned taking programming classes, and I and that not being useful. And it's not from one standpoint. It's not going to get you technical respect, but it will get you respect as a product manager for caring about understanding the language that the programmers speak. And it's sort of like before I went back to France, I spent a quarter learning French in community college. And walking into France and attempting to speak their language and doing my absolute best at giving them an accent that was somewhat French, good enough that they brought me in French menus until they discovered how little I actually knew. But it generated some respect, and I think the same thing is true walking into a programming community and the same difficulty of, you know, the French care about their language, programmers care about their language, but they appreciate people who try to understand them.
For sure. It's almost like we're talking about a cultural difference between people who would be product managers if they weren't previously technical developers. And Yeah, and there's certainly a bias in Silicon Valley for product managers to come out of programming or technical development. And, you know, it's an issue in the product management world, if such a thing exists, that there's different types of product managers. And I really appreciate at the beginning when you're classifying the different types of programmers based on what their orientation is and based on what types of platforms they're programming on. It occurred to me that would be a really good way to differentiate the types of product managers there are as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that one of the challenges with being a technical product manager, and we highlight this in the book, is that what tends to happen, and I've seen this time and time again, people who are highly technical, the primary job of a product manager is to get a set of requirements codified in such a way that they can be communicated sufficiently with enough detail that the technical team can take it and run with it. Now, that often entails, or usually should entail, saying what it is you want, not how to do it. But a product manager who is too technical will veer off into how to do it as opposed to what he wants done. And that's where things start to go awry.
For sure. In answer to the Q1 question, what does good software development management look like? One of the answers was building something that creates value, and the other was from a frequent participant, ooh, KitKat. Ooh, clear alignment of team, its purpose, what equals complete, infectious enthusiasm that brings all together.
I read Kat's entry, that last one, and wrote it down. And it's a great summary of one of the pieces, that infectious enthusiasm that brings it all together. And it's core to some of what we talk about in the book. And so I want to laud her for that because I think it really well states one of those pieces. Another of those pieces we were talking about earlier, which is listening. The communication skills of a programming manager are essential, and those are communication skills, both the ability to communicate the team's work to the rest of the company, the ability to translate the rest of the company to the team, and the ability to listen in all of those venues, whether they're managing down, whether they're managing up, whether they're managing out, to understand all of what's going on to be able to do that translation.
a challenge for sure, because it requires speaking different languages. Not only, not specifically software languages as much as cultural languages of the C-suite, of the customer, end user, market, the sales team, as well as the developers.
It is. It's like they're different domains, but they are entirely different languages. And similar to that, a great software development manager is going to be seeking to collaborate both in managing down and managing up and managing out. They're going to be looking to what does a good software development manager look like? It's someone who's doing that collaboration in all directions and who's listening in all directions.
And we go into some of the reasons why that's important in one of the chapters about managing out. As, for example, one wouldn't think it's important to take in and have allies in your finance department, but it often is critical. You know, finance is typically so far removed from programming, you know, they deliver paychecks. What else do you need from them, right? But, you know, you forget that they also help justify new hires and adding people to your teams and lots of other things that you need allies in that group as well. So, you know, you do need to create alliances throughout the organization if you're going to be very effective.
Similarly, is creating alliances with HR and with staffing. So a lot of programming managers, when they move from being programmers to being programming managers, think, oh, you know, they have a distaste for HR and for staffing. But in fact, one of our favorite rules of thumb actually is that programming managers are always recruiting. And always recruiting means that you need to make the staffing person in your organization your best friend. And making HR, who puts together the offers and is your collaboration partner in making hires happen, your best friend, because hiring is a critical activity for good software development managers.
Probably the most important one, hire the right people.
And that's the other thing I appreciate, that in the book you provide job descriptions for HR to use. And that was one of the particularly sticky and frustrating things for my husband throughout his career, was that the job descriptions never really described what the actual job was, and the people who maybe were giving him the technical or prior to the technical weren't even asking the right questions.
Yeah, and it actually goes further than that. Not only the job descriptions, but then you have to get good job descriptions. I've never seen, quite frankly, an HR department come up with that. But then also it carries through into measuring performance, because the job descriptions have to relate to the performance reviews you do, and typically they're not aligned in any way. And so we provided a holistic set of job descriptions and performance review things that can help align those two. And I think that personally that's a very important part, because people really do want feedback, even if it's negative feedback. They love feedback, especially if it can be done in such a way that it turns into a positive rather than a negative.
Yeah, and then the next step beyond that is a good software development manager needs to develop almost a psychologist's understanding of the programmers on their team. It starts from job descriptions. It starts from abilities, but it moves into what motivates the programmers, what motivates each of the individual programmers on the team. And watching how good programming managers motivate their teams is a fascinating activity all by itself.
Yeah, that was one of the things I really, like I was saying, I laughed and I cried when you were describing programmers and how they want to come in at any time and dress any way, and how they consider themselves either artists or craftsmen. That should be required reading for HR people who are dealing with hiring software people.
And maybe senior management as well.
Sure.
Yeah, back to your earlier comment about, you know, it's a general management book. We actually think it's there are aspects of it that could be very helpful to a lot of the C-level executives if they would read it, especially some of the rules of thumb that are relevant to how they make decisions.
There are very few companies these days that are not relying on software, software developers, software development in some way to drive and underpin their businesses. And yet, as we point out in the book, software development is a mystery to it's, even a mystery to some of us who do it, but it's a general mystery, and we try to unravel that mystery and make it more understandable.
Everyone has to deal with software at some point in their job. If their product is not specifically a software or web product, they're dealing with software in operations to distribute their product, to promote their product. Everything is software related and technical. It's the whole advertising and publishing industries have become all about software.
You're absolutely right.
Yep.
So why don't we go on to Q2, which is how do good programming managers motivate their teams?
This is one of those transitional kinds of challenges for software development managers. As programmers, we don't think a lot about what motivates us, and then suddenly you become a manager and you have to think about what motivates your team. The tradition in maybe in the world, certainly in the United States, is, well, throw money at problems. And one of the real insights, and it took me a number of years managing before I ran across it, and in all places, and I say that as a programmer, not as a manager, in all places, the Harvard Business Review, any manager in any other field would say, well, of course you ran across it in the Harvard Business Review, but no programmer would ever have read the Harvard Business Review. It was an HBR article that pointed out that the things that motivate people and the things that demotivate people are different. And that was such an incredible aha for me that money is not one of the things that motivate people. And in fact, this goes in spades for programmers. It's once you pay people enough, then what motivates them is something entirely different. If you don't pay them enough, it will demotivate them. But if you pay them enough, then incremental amounts of it really don't motivate much behavior. You can reward people with money. You have to be careful about that. There's a whole psychology around motivating with money and not demotivating with money, even though you're giving people money. But what really motivates programmers, we think, is the opportunity to make a difference in the world. And a great programming manager is going to be motivating their people by connecting what it is programmers do with the mission of the company and the mission of the company with making a difference in the world.
Even in some small way. I mean, not everybody can change the world like Steve Jobs set out to do with Apple. But almost every company I've been involved with is trying to change the world in some way, in some small way, and I've used that as an incredible lever to help motivate my teams.
Thing that definitely I see that people who choose to accept the challenge of product management have in common, that they care about the excellence, the quality of the product, because the finished product will make a difference in the world. And so that's what the motivation is. And I just want to make a note that we got through a half hour before we mentioned Apple.
And I want to make a note of your comment there, Cindy, that you have really called out one of the places that product managers and programming managers should find common ground to work together and collaborate, because making a difference in the world is key to both of those people.
Yeah.
Yeah, who isn't a key to? But I guess if that's not key to them, I'm not talking to them. So it's definitely key. It definitely explains, however, why people would spend all night and just get so focused on getting that product out, completing what needs to happen for the launch, the QA, all the different pieces to guarantee that the product's going to get to the end user and be functional and be exceptional.
There's probably nothing that more frustrates a programmer than having poured their soul into a product and not have it ship.
Or have it poorly received.
That you even call it pouring their soul into the product. That's a whole other conversation that I have on my list of episodes to talk about product integrity, and that has to do with how much the end product reflects the amount of energy, input, and commitment that was put into getting it out the door. Why don't we move on to Q3, which is, what are programming managers bedeviled by?
Management.
And are you holding your tongue because you don't want to say product manager specifically?
Well, I think that clearly there is often by design, the tension between product managers and software development managers. They often have quite different agendas, clearly being completely customer-driven, which many product managers are, which is quite different than being technology-driven, which is how many software development managers are, and trying to find the common ground there is a challenge. But I would also just say that I believe Ron and I both have spent a large amount of our time and energy not only managing our teams, but managing to protect our teams from the currents that swirl around the executive teams. When I said management, I really meant management on a general sense, and then product management as well.
You know, I think that is a shared perspective, that people who come out of more of a technical perspective into product management, it's because of that frustration where they saw that their technical projects got thwarted by misunderstanding of the managers. So
yes.
So they come into product management to work across functions to guarantee that their products will see the light of day, and also to guarantee the quality of those products. And so I agree with you. Look, it's very difficult to be a manager, to be a product manager. There isn't great training. Is there training specifically for how to be a software product manager?
There are small amounts of it in places, but the you know, one of the reasons we wrote this book was that for project management there must be 1,000 books on project management, and there are scores of books on each of the methodologies for project management. There are lots and lots of books, probably thousands of books on managing people, but the number of books that provide any insight for new programming managers into how to manage programmers and how to manage programming teams numbers less than the fingers on two hands. There are 5 or 6 or 7 books like that, and we value each one of them, and we felt that we could make a contribution that those 5 or 6 hadn't made already. So that was part of what drove our doing it. There's just very little out there. When I talked at CodeCamp, I had 100 people in the room, 50 of them were managers. I asked the managers in the room, people who had or had ever managed, to stand up, and then I asked, how many of you have had a day or more of training in being a manager? And half of them sat down. And then I asked, how many of you got your management training before you became a manager? I only had 4 people left standing. That's the challenge of becoming a manager, is really no insight, no training, no background. Almost everybody in the room got a lot of training in programming before they became a programmer, but got none in management before they became a manager.
And I think if you went through any technical schools, looked for courses on managing people, you wouldn't find it. You'd find project management about how to program, but not about what turns out a lot of people have to do, whether they're still programmers and managing their peers as a team lead or real software development managers.
I'm always looking to see if there are product management courses and what the product management knowledge that's being disseminated is. And I am starting to see graduate level courses in technical management, but they're not about managing the programmers. They're about managing the technical product build.
Yes.
Right. So, you know, one of the things that I think, to the general question of what programming managers are bedeviled by, one of the answers to this question is the same answer, I think, for product managers, and that's lack of respect from senior management. Now, it's not across the board. It's by far not every company. There are lots of companies where senior management respects their programming organizations and their product managers, but there are organizations that neither one gets respect for what it knows. Senior management ignores product management, ignores the research that product managers do with customers to find out what it is customers want and say, well, we already know, and similarly ignores the realities of programming and software development to say, well, you know, we should be able to do 5 times as much without changing the schedule. or we can make this change and it doesn't make any difference.
I'm jumping out of the questions here, but I see Agile as a movement kind of in reaction to that. Do you see that anything is improving in Agile organizations?
I'm going to answer that first, because I definitely see things improving in Agile organizations. That said, trying to insert an Agile practice into a top-down micromanaging organization, I've seen not work. And the reason for that is that I believe that Agile is not just a development set of practices and framework and an approach, but it needs to be reflected across the entire organization. Organizations that the entire organization is able to become Agile are remarkable in the change that happens. And when it's just inside of the development organization or the product organization, it's quite different. It may be successful if that organization can be shielded from the rest of the larger corporate environment. It will not be successful if the rest of the corporate environment continues to try to micromanage it.
Sure. So you're talking about being aligned with the whole business mission, vision, and operations being aligned with the principles and values of Agile across the board. Certainly that.
But it's slightly more than that, though. I think it's also the processes involved, because there's a set of expectations that come from senior management or whatever that are not necessarily fulfilled in the Agile process. So buying into that is required as well.
Right, and that means changes in finance. It means changes in HR. It means changes in how performance reviews are thought about and done. It's an across-the-board change to really drive the opportunity for success that Agile offers.
But at the same time, Agile does have its downsides. I've seen examples of it where it's also used as a crutch to keep from committing by development teams to long-term objectives. And so it's a careful, you have to manage it very carefully, is all I can say.
Yeah, you do. I've talked to a VP of engineering at one company who said, oh, yeah, our product managers say that they don't have to write anything down now because we're doing Agile.
So actually...
Which we...
Go ahead.
We guarantee that's a recipe for a disaster.
That's for sure. So Q4, really Q5, Q4 is how a programming manager is tormented by product managers. And Q5 is also what are the forces that cause discord between product and software development managers? Pieces of the same pie here.
All right.
I think we're probably going to say the same thing. Go ahead.
The quick answer to how programming managers are tormented by product managers have to do with requirements and prioritization for me. Requirements either too much, defining it all the way down to how, and Mickey talked about that earlier, or requirements that are too little. We're doing Agile, so we don't have to write down any requirements. And then product managers who are unwilling to prioritize. I think one of the places that product managers particularly get respect among programmers is the skill set of being able to go out to talk to customers, to communicate what customer needs are, and to prioritize those into nuggets of value, you know, to go to minimal marketable features that Mark Denn and Jane Wang talked about in their book, Software by Numbers, to be able to quantify and prioritize the value that customers are going to get from doing this specific thing. Jim Highsmith talked to the Agile Leadership Network a couple of years ago and gave a rule of thumb that's among the rules of thumb in the center section of our book. He said, if you, speaking to product managers, if you don't have time to calculate value, we don't have time to calculate cost.
I think that Ron answered the question like I thought I was going to about requirements, which is what I was going to say. I mean, I think it's the thing that can bind product managers and software development managers together and also bedevil them and drive them apart is a disagreement about requirements. And also, requirements have been known to change on occasion. Changing requirements is always an issue. We go back to good, fast, and cheap. Pick any two. You know, what is it you really want? Of course, when changing requirements take and change those two, which two of those you want, it can be even worse. But so I would say, if you can get the requirements right and get buy-in across the board, and then manage to keep feature creep out, acknowledge there will be changes, but don't change the entire product. Change a feature if you have to, but then acknowledge it's going to take time to do it. It just seems so simple on one hand, and it's so hard on the other.
Yeah, acknowledging the time required is definitely the essence of that. I have actually seen organizations that are quite successful with massive amounts of change because they're agile. They're delivering a product at the end of every sprint, whether that's 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks. And they are not focused on delivering a 400-page product requirement specification. They're focused on delivering customer value and always focused on delivering the highest customer value. They're not focused on finishing because all of us who do programming and I think wise product managers all recognize that software's never finished.
Except for one thing, and that's different types of software, of course, require a different kind of finish. If you're making a website that you can change tomorrow, it's easy. But if you're making an embedded product that's going to go into an automobile, where if you have to change it, you've got to recall the car, well, you better finish pretty well.
Yeah, or a medical
one. And so you also have to take into account exactly what it is you're building in terms of the requirements and the ability to change.
Yeah, or a medical instrument or a spacecraft launch.
Spacecraft launches, you can't even recall them.
Oh, gosh, and that brings up the whole issue of where QA fits in the mix. When we were still delivering software on CDs that I would have to push out trial copies before it had gone through QA, and that was always an issue. Why would we give a trial copy? How is a trial copy that's buggy going to sell the full version? Okay, what are objectives shared between programming managers and product managers that could encourage collaboration? So we've talked about the shared idea in contributing to better products, but are there more specific things?
Well, I think that one of the key things that a good software development manager and product manager can do is develop a shared vision, okay? If the vision is shared, which is then translated into a great set of requirements that can be agreed upon, and a process to manage those requirements as the development continues, it's a great starting place. I've always been amazed at how far a simple vision for even a complex product can take it. You know, if you can't explain it, how can you make it? And so getting a great shared vision is a good place to start a collaboration.
Yeah, and some specifics in addition to that is both product managers and programming managers are often responsible for roadmaps. Each has their own roadmap to do. The product manager is developing a product roadmap. The development manager is developing a technology roadmap. But they need to be in parallel. And in sync, absolutely. And in developing technology roadmaps, the very first set of people that I bring in are product managers to make that synchronization happen, to start from the product vision in thinking in them thinking through, you know, what's our technical debt and what's our backlog and where are the crufty places that need to be worked on and where are the risks in the software already and where are the risks in what we're trying to build and how to and what's the architecture that needs to underlie this and what's the architecture that already underlies it and what needs to be fixed. And all of those things need to be in parallel with the product vision. And similarly, from the product side, all of the technology risks, opportunities, and needs need to be in sync with the product roadmap. And so that's a really good place for programming managers and product managers to collaborate as well.
We used to develop product requirements documents that would be 20 to 50 pages long that included that were included in the marketing requirements documents. So certainly for long lead software development projects, these are still necessary. In startups, they're being put into a one-pager business case. Is that something that the software programmers can relate to? Is that enough information? I mean, I'm just going back to, at the beginning, getting aligned with what it is that the intention of the product is.
So, well, I don't think you can have a set of requirements on one page. You can have a vision, and, you know, the problem with just having a vision is be careful what you ask for. You could get something which doesn't align at all with what you need. You know, let's just say it's got to run on a mobile phone, but you don't mention that as part of the requirements. Well, you could get something that's, you know, based upon SaaS or something, which, you know, requires a ton of hardware to make happen in disk space. And so be careful of codifying into just a vision and having a go at it. Now, what often happens in startups is because the teams are so small, sharing that through osmosis, you know, just in the bumping to each other in the hall and having that shared vision, that can carry it a long way. So don't get me wrong. There are a lot of startups that have been done on a napkin, right? But as you take and translate that into repeatable product development in teams more than a handful or two, then you're in trouble.
It's one of the reasons that Mickey and I have a lot of respect for really great product managers. The one-page vision document is clearly not enough. At the same time, 400 pages of requirements, which you said 50, Cindy, but I talk to programmers and programming managers all the time and ask the question, how many of you have gotten 400-page requirements documents? And every hand in the room goes up. That's too much. And it's too much because I don't know very many programmers who can read all of that and absorb it.
Or will.
Or will. Or even if they did, will remember it all and remember it at the right moment and remember the interactions and dependencies in all of it. And then the follow-up question I've asked programmers and programming managers, okay, so you got a 400-page document. What percentage of that did you actually deliver? And I get numbers in the 15 to 25% range, which is part of what drove the Agile movement to say, okay, so we need to understand what it is we're trying to build, but we don't need all the details of it now by doing all the detailing of it by saying, well, we've got to spend 3 months writing 400 pages of requirements first and then only deliver 15 to 25% of it, then 75 to 85% of that 3 months was waste for the product managers. And it was a waste for all the engineers who tried to read it and understand all 400 pages of that. And it was a waste for all the engineers who didn't read it but were tormented by the fact that they hadn't read it and didn't know everything that was in it. It was waste for all the QA developers and engineers and testers who read the whole thing and developed test plans based on all of it. And it's part of what drove Agile to that, let's write down a story that's in one sentence for each one of those features, but not do the detail until they bubble to the top of the value chain and say, this is the most valuable thing to do in the next sprint. We need details on this. And that's the moment when programmers need the detail for the features. And back to Mickey's point, there are requirements at the very beginning that apply to the whole product, like it should run on mobile, that need to be there from moment one.
Excellent. I cannot believe we've come to the end of the hour, far too short. Certainly would like to invite you both to come back and talk about this some more. We've been talking about managing the unmanageable, the book by Ron Lichty and Mickey Mantle. It's available at www.managingtheunmanageable.net. If you have been listening today and tweeting, following the show, there will be a drawing from the most active tweeters to win this book, a signed copy. So you're welcome to continue tweeting following the show, and I will let you know who the winner is. Join us in person on November 13th in San Francisco at Startup Product Talks. San Francisco, Ron will be talking about the book in person to the Startup Product community. You can find out more at sfproducttalks.com. Also, thank you to our sponsor, the AIPMM. On November 16th, Ron will be on the AIPMM webinar series, where he will present a presentation about chaos to clarity, managing the unmanageable, specifically for the product management and product marketing community. Non-members of the AIPMM can listen in live to the webinar, but you have to be a member to access the replay. So sign up to listen live to the show. Thank you so much, Ron and Mickey, for joining us. There's so much more I want to talk to you about. We got about halfway through the questions. Thank you to our audience for listening. I'm going to sign off and play about our sponsors. We are now receiving over 10,000 listeners. So if you have a tech product, a software product, if you want to reach a wide audience of people who are interested in this information, desperately interested in learning more about product management, software management, and how to create successful products, please go to info@prodmgmttalk.com for more information, and we will see you next. Listen to the archive of our talks at blogtalkradio.com/prodmgmttalk. Thank you, Ron and Mickey, for joining us today.
Thanks, Cindy.
Thank you so much, Cindy.
Great. And don't forget to vote. Have a great day. Thank you to our platinum sponsor, the Association of International Product Marketing and Management. Visit them on the web, www.aipmm.com. The AIPMM is a worldwide certifying body of product marketing, management, and team professionals. The AIPMM promotes worldwide excellence and forwards product management professionalism with certification credentials, education, trainings, networking, and professional growth opportunities. AIPMM membership benefits include eligibility for certification, partner offerings and training discounts, productivity tools, career center, mentor matching, advanced access to new curriculums, webinar series, thought leaders, and private events. AIPMM certification credentials allow individual members to demonstrate their level of expertise and provide corporate members an assurance that their product professionals are operating at peak performance. Join us in person for lively discussions and great networking with product professionals at Startup Product Talks San Francisco Monthly. Go to sfproducttalks.com to find out more. Thank you to our broadcast sponsor, Atlassian. Software is transforming the world. Atlassian is helping transform the teams building it. Atlassian helps innovators everywhere plan, build, and launch great software. Find out why more than 21,000 companies of all sizes use Atlassian issue tracking, collaboration, and software development products to work faster and smarter together. Visit Atlassian.com, Atlassian.com. Discover how to work together to develop amazing products. Startup Product Summit, February 7th, 2013. Startupproduct.com. As a top 10 business podcast on the Blog Talk Radio Network, we receive 10,000 listens per week. Imagine your brand engaged with our audience for over 50 minutes on their personal devices. Sponsor us. Email sponsor@prodmgmttalk.com for more information. Our intro theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com and the great Mark Blasco. We are broadcasting live from Studio 132.com.